the wholesaling business is not the asset. The asset is the actual machine that acquires the assets. But if it's not acquiring the assets, there is no asset. The asset is you. And so don't lose sight of that.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Real Grit. I'm here with Gabe Garcia. Gabe's a good friend of mine. He's out of South Florida and has been in this business for quite some time. And he's full of wisdom and knowledge. And I'm excited to talk to him here. Gabe, how you doing, buddy?
I am great, brother. How are you?
Good. I appreciate you dressing up here to be on the show, bringing the A game. All right. So you're out of South Florida. Tell us just a little more about your background in business, and then I'll bring you to current. But tell us how you got started and bring us through your background.
Yeah. So I guess you can say I do have a background in business. I was a past drug dealer when I was in high school and college.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
That was my first, well, I guess you could, I probably had also a little side hustles. I remember when we were kids, we used to do like during hurricane seasons, we used to go and like pay people, get paid to like pick up all the trash and the leaves and put people's shutters up. And we would make quite good money on the weekends. But yeah, other than that, I mean, I don't really come from a family of entrepreneurs or anything like that in my immediate family. I went to school for music business at Full Sail in Orlando back in, man, like 2010. I want to say somewhere around there, did that whole thing, was going to go into the music business. At that point in time, hip hop was like my life, and I wanted to be a famous hip hop artist. And I was recording and doing all types of music. But then like, just when I actually got in the nitty gritty of working in the music business, I realized like, man, this business sucks. And I don't like, I love making music, but like the making money, like how you make money in this thing, like it sucks. And the lifestyle it brings also sucks. So got out of that.
It's a lot of glamour. And then it's hard to, once you start peeling back that onion, you really got a sense of it, didn't you?
Quick. It didn't even take me a year to figure it out. Although I should have not had to spend $40,000 in student loans to go figure that out. I should have figured that out. Just there's much easier ways to figure that out. But that's another conversation. Anyways, I just self-taught. Like I went to the books, I started hitting the books. You know, I realized that like, okay, I'm broke and I don't have money. Maybe there's something that I don't know about money that, and that's probably the reason why I don't have it, you know? So that thought was like a game-changing thought for me. Cause I listened to that and I'm like, all right, let's go see if I'm right. Let's start reading books about money. And then all of a sudden the money book started coming, and then your brain starts churning, and then you start thinking about things. And then, you know, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books and the Richest Man from Babylon and all these classic financial books started coming in, getting the juices turning, seeing the power in real estate, loved the idea of like assets pay for liabilities and provide income. I'm like, man, this is great. Like, sign me up. So I started going to seminars and the courses, and then eventually got a coach, and you know, the rest is history. I think we started this biz back in what, 2000, like late 13, probably around there.
Somewhere in 2013. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Where are you? So you started it, let's say you started it in the business in 2013. What did you start doing? What section of the business?
So it was wholesaling, because what clicked for me was, like I said, the passive income coming in from the assets to pay liabilities. So I'm like, okay, great. You know, I understand this. Then the next part was, okay, well, how do I get the cash to do that? Because
how do I get the assets? When you're talking about the cash flow quadrant from Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
That's what you're referencing but cash is not cash. While it's an asset, it's not an income producing asset.
Right. And I was at that time, I had got a job, my first like career job, quote unquote, like after college, I was making 30 grand a year working for Humana, the health insurance company. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I'm making 30 grand a year. The reality is I'm not able to save very much of this 30 grand because most of it's going to rent and like, and food, and there's not much left. And I was able to pretty much save anywhere from like $800 to $1,000 a month. That was like the best I can do at that time. And, but even that, I was like, all right, well, by the time I save enough to put a down payment on a property, like this is going to take forever. Like I'm still going to take me 20, 30 years to retire. And I don't want to wait 20, 30 years to become rich. Like I want to figure this out much faster. So yeah, then that's when I started learning about wholesaling, going to the seminars and all that stuff. And I'm like, great, if I can learn to wholesale and I can learn to find the best deals in the market, not only can I make money off of them, but then when I'm ready to buy, I can pick those best deals for myself and keep them in the portfolio. So that was the kind of the initial thought, and one that seems very, very simple in practice, but one that is very, very hard to do in that, in actuality. And we can talk into that, but there's a lot of difficulties and challenges with applying that practice into real life scenarios. You know,
the biggest one has to be staying disciplined.
100%. Staying disciplined, not forgetting why you're doing it, you know, and not getting excited when the cash rolls in, because it's easy to think that it's always going to roll in and it's always going to come and it's always going to be more than what you're bringing in, and that you can just keep growing your business and you'll be able to get there faster. And like, you know, you tell yourself all these things that are not necessarily true, and you believe in it, because at a certain point, especially in the beginning, if you start having success, you become like the, you get this like a sense of like ego aggrandizement, if you want to call it, but like you think you're the golden child, you know,
Superman,
the Midas touch, right? And everything you touch turns into gold, so you'll figure it out,
right? Right. Yes, then bumps come along the way, right? And then as you scale and scale past yourself, it's not always the, your ability to replicate yourself is challenging, and sometimes you land people who are better than you, sometimes they're not quite as good as you, right?
Right.
And there's some interesting uniqueness to that through people. What does the team look like today?
So today I got four, is that right, Max? Yeah, four people in acquisitions, full-time. I got two people in dispositions. And so when I say acquisitions, all these people are just dedicated to buying houses, right?
Buying property. You
know, yep. Yeah, qualifying leads and buying houses. Dispositions is in charge of everything that it requires to sell the property, you know, from title to finding the buyer, blah, blah, blah. So I got two in dispo. I got a personal assistant. I have a business partner who's the CMO and runs finance. He's got a personal assistant. We got a bookkeeper, and that's pretty much it. That's the, now that is the house buying team. Now we have the holding company, which is very similar, but it's not the same.
Let's pivot there in a second. Talk to me about house buying. Is that just the wholesale business? Or when you say house buying, are you talking rolling up to fix and flip and rolling up into portfolioing it?
Yeah. So that is strictly the wholesaling operation.
Just wholesale. That's all it does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then talk to me about the other side. Do you fix and flip at all?
Not really. So the reason I say not really is because I have a personal company, like my own company that I don't own with Omer. And once in a blue moon, if there is a deal that we're having a hard time selling, or I just look at it and I like it a lot, then I will come in as any other investor and either match the offer that's at the table or beat it, take it down myself, and I will do whatever I will with it, whether it's flipping it.
Just to elaborate, you're going to match the offer that another investor is offering your wholesale company for the property. Correct. You match it so your wholesale company earns that spread and all the guys get paid. Then you square up with your partner just fine, and then you handle that yourself.
And I'll go flip it or do something else with it. I got like two of those going on right now, so it's not anything crazy, but it is a significant source of like side income on the side, and it is something that I'll do, but not as a company. We're not doing it as a company.
Yep. So walk me through the cash flow quadrant. You've got a business that's producing, you've turned your cash into really marketing that you've employed to turn marketing dollars into opportunities. Those opportunities become properties in which you take down on the sales acquisition company. You then wholesale those off, generate profit, right? You've increased your dollars, your original cash through that process. And then how do you employ those dollars?
So what your question was, employing dollars, like how, what do you mean specifically by that?
How do you put those dollars that to work in the form of turning them into assets?
Okay. Okay. So profits. Okay. So we're talking after. Okay. So yes, that is a great question. So the formula that we have today is, first and foremost, we're not accumulating assets or any of that until the wholesaling business is like good. And when I mean good, I'm meaning like, okay, it's got no debt on the books. It's running a healthy margin. Let's call it at least 25%, right? After owners are taking their pay as well.
You're talking net net. Everybody's been paid, including the owners.
Including the owners.
Yep.
25%. And that the business has a minimum set of cash in the bank, like non-negotiable, don't touch me, like, you know, emergency type
money. You stack that cash for a rainy day, whatever, or opportunistic day.
Correct. So like for us, so like our overhead, it's tough to tell you an exact number because it fluctuates with commissions and all that stuff. But let's just call it somewhere between 100 to call it 100. Let's just call it 100 for the sake of this argument.
100,000?
100,000 a month in overhead.
Yep.
So honestly, like we, and I'll be transparent on this call, like we're not even there right now. We're at about, we want to be at about 500,000 in cash with no debt on the company's books.
You're saying stack cash, 500,000 where you want to be.
Yeah, because in the way I come up with that formula, you know, everyone's different. You got to do what feels good. 500 just feels good. Like I got 100 to play with, like for escrows that we got to make on properties, or there's always cash requirements that come up even when you're wholesaling, right? Like sometimes the sellers need advances, so we got to front the money so they can get out of the properties or whatever. Sometimes we got to fix things prior to closing to get a deal done. You know, we got to put escrow deposits down here in South Florida. You know, some people are like, well, why do you only put $100? Well, in a competitive market like South Florida, if you're only going to put $100, you're going to lose out on a lot of deals.
You're not buying the property.
Yeah.
Right.
So we got to put up more money. You know, we got to be more competitive. We got to stand out from the competition. So we do. So 100,000 at any given point in time is a good number for us at that. So then it's not really cash reserves because that's being used. That's out. So it leaves us about 4 months of cash at any given time of expenses, you know, and that feels good. I feel like, okay, like if shit hits the fan, we can go a whole quarter with spending every single dollar without making any cuts and like we can be good. So I'm good with that number. So after that number,
it allows you to operate from a position of strength, doesn't it?
100%.
Yeah. Without that pressure or mental or insecurity. Yeah.
100%. So that's where we're at now. There's another caveat to it because one of the things that we didn't talk about, because you might be asking, well, if you're not there yet, why are you buying assets? Well, the reason is because of the tax advantages. So we've been able to figure out a loophole. We're able to use the money that we would quote unquote pay the IRS with and basically use that money to acquire the assets and basically like wipe off our tax bill. So we're not technically using cash that would have stayed in reserves. We're basically using money that we would have paid the IRS to buy these assets. And that's a more advanced
topic. You've got a line item there that you have, you know, either you've accounted for it one way or another, what you're going to have to pay the IRS in taxes from your earned income.
Correct.
You're buying assets and then you're probably doing an accelerated depreciation.
Correct. And I track that on my balance sheet at all times, like at any given time in the year. I know what I owe the IRS and what I'm going to owe the IRS this year. And so I'm always thinking about, okay, well, if I make these moves, how can I lower that amount and still create a better net worth or improve my balance sheet?
We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Need more leads? Who doesn't, right? Want access to the vacant home list, absentee owners, tax liens, pre-foreclosures that are all routinely updated? Well, you can get it all in one place. Batchleads.io. Batch Leads gives you nationwide property search, nationwide buyer search, comparable home sales, quick filters, and hundreds of prospect filters to allow you to slice and dice it any which way you wish. Batch Leads is trusted by some of the nation's top real estate investors. And with plans starting as low as $30 a month, there's a lot of bang for the buck. Batch Leads includes unlimited list stacking, so there's never a need to buy another program or figure it out in Excel. They even include discounted skip tracing with every single plan. It's the system my team and I personally use. Use coupon code IMPACT when checking out for 50% off your first month. Batchleads.io, coupon code IMPACT for 50% off your first month. You've got your eye on the ball, and then you also have an understanding of the levers that you can pull to offset your liability.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Correct. Does that play into your calculation then when you're buying an asset? When you're putting you want to buy whatever, you know, an eightplex, does that play into your calculation, the tax that you no longer have to pay the federal government as a result of this? Does that play into your calculation when putting that, making that thing pencil from a return basis?
It doesn't.
And that's because
it's a motivating factor.
That may lead you into the market.
Yes. It's a motivating factor, but at the end of the day, we're kind of getting into deeper conversations here. And we could go however way you want. But when I look at an asset, here's the way I think about it. I don't know if the way I think about it is maybe there are better ways to think about it, but this is how I think about it. I'm like, all right, real estate, let's just acknowledge this. Like, real estate is not passive. Okay. And it's a headache. It comes with lots of headaches. And so I have to ask myself, what will justify the headache? Like, what am I willing to give up in exchange for the headache? So I'm trying to like not fool myself into thinking, well, I'm going to buy these assets and everything's going to be great. Right. I mean, like this year alone, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we probably acquired several million dollars in assets. And yeah, they're going to be producing on pro forma when they're all done, $80,000 or $85,000 a year in net cash flow, accounting for vacancies and all that stuff. The reality is I bought all those assets at the beginning of the year. I haven't seen that money at all. Like, that money should come in next year, essentially. But even then, I still probably won't see it because I got to build reserves in that company. And like, it takes time and you're pushing, you know, like one of my friends, we like to talk about like you're a running back in the NFL, like looking for the holes and like you're getting hit from each angle, you know, to like build this. It's not an easy build. But the way I ask myself is, all right, what's worth the headaches? And so I look at, all right, if I had 100K, I can get 100K and I can put it in mutual funds and I can probably safely earn 10% with what I know, right? And that's without lifting a finger. I just put it there, set it and forget it, done. So it's like, all right, well, if I can earn 10% there without doing anything and without much work, like what justifies the headache? So in my mind, I'm like double. So if I can get 20%, I'll take the headache on because that's double the speed, right? So So when I buy an asset, I got to get minimum 20% return on the equity. And it's not, or cash on cash return. It's not an exact science though, too, because through forced appreciation, you're getting more equity than what you would have got in the stock too, right?
Correct.
But still, I'm working for the forced appreciation. It's not like it's magically appearing. Like, I'm having to work for it. You know?
It's called force for a reason. Somebody has to force it.
Someone has to force it.
Someone's got to make it happen. Yeah.
So that's how I look at it. It's like, all right, if I can get 20% on the money that I'm investing in, then I'm good. I'll hold. I'll keep these properties. Now, if the property makes sense and it has equity, but it's not giving me that 20% return, great, sell it. Because if it's only giving me 10%, I can just sell it and I can go put in the stock for 10 and it washes and it's the same net outcome. Doesn't do any difference. So that's how I look at it, you know?
Yeah. I'm going to take a hard left here. Who's, as a child, who had the greatest single influence in your life?
As a child?
Yeah.
Probably my dad.
Yeah. How did he make that impact?
I would say through many conscious and unconscious ways. My dad was always there for me as a kid and just my whole life, really. He was not an entrepreneur, but he was very noble, you know, an honorable person, would never cheat, never lie, never steal, never deceive, never manipulate. He also was like, he has very high standards. I think those are some of the things that rubbed off on me as a kid. Like, one of the things he always told me was like, if you're going to do something, do it right, or don't fucking do it, you know? And he just had very, very high standards. Like, for him, right, or doing something done was like excellent. Like, cleaning the car is an example. Like, if there's a small little scratch or a small little dink, he would get on your ass about that. Be like, look, you're not doing it right. Missed it. You know, like he was there to point out every flaw and error and issue with everything. And one of the reasons why he never brought anyone to wash his car or cut his lawn or any of that, because no one can do it as good as yourself. No one, you know? So yeah, I would say him, man. He was always there, you know, was always there for me going into sports and pushing me to always be better, not putting up with my shit, disciplining me whenever I got out of line, you know? And
In your office, you've built a really good team, a very productive team. What's your culture like?
Very eclectic. I think that's the best part of our company, is the culture. Everybody just, I think everybody really gets along, and we all work from home. So that's something unique about us. We've never had an office. So everybody works from home, does their own thing.
Even when operating just in South Florida, everybody works from home.
You know, we pay higher salaries than mostly anyone in our industry. We take care of our people. There's no like clock in, clock out type of deal. You know, it's just like, this is what you're held accountable to. You get the results, you're good. You don't get them, we're not good. you know, people can take as much vacation time as they want. They can step out of the office whenever they want. Total autonomy. Yeah. It's interesting to see, but we all like, we're all pretty close knit. This, like this Saturday, as a matter of fact, we have a yacht party. So we're all going out on a yacht, and we just, you know, we like to get together in person at least once a month, just because we never see each other in person. But yeah, I don't know if that is a good job of describing it. I'm so close to it that sometimes I'm probably not the best person to describe it, because like we live and breathe it, you know.
Was a culture created consciously or unconsciously? Yeah.
Very consciously.
Yeah. From the get go.
Very, very consciously. And just like how I'm now with no shirt, like we'll go do our daily huddle today at 3:30. You'll see me on my bike riding around, you know, on the huddle, and everyone's just reporting their numbers. You know, data is very important. So like all the data is very transparent for everyone to see. And I think transparency is like a big thing in the company, and trust and love. And like, you know, I don't really want people in the company that don't want to be there and don't want to like learn and grow and get better at what they're doing. You know, so yeah, and there's very little drama in our company, if any at all, right now. COVID was good for that. COVID helped us get rid of a couple people that were good employees, but were kind of dramatic and sometimes creating drama and little toxic bouts of energy here and there. And when they left after COVID, man, like the team just got better. We got smaller and more profitable, you know?
That's cool. That's cool. This business, you know, if you go on Facebook, everything's Lambos and Rolexes. So it's, we both know from being in the industry as long as we have, it's not always that way. What's the biggest challenge you've had to go through? Maybe a loss, maybe a tough deal, maybe a tough property, maybe personal challenges. How did that, what was that, and how did it impact you in the business side of things?
Yeah. I would say the biggest challenge or set of challenges was like 2019. Going through a bad marriage that I finally, you know, we actually got divorced officially with my ex-wife this year, which was great. I left the house last year in December 2020. But at that time, it was very, very toxic at home. So like the toxicity from that, and then just the business going bad, man. Like we probably had about four, I want to say at least 4 or 5 million in debt from like flips that were literally all of those flips. And when I say all of them, like I'm not exaggerating, like they all went bad. Every single one.
Went well.
Yeah. We had like $40,000 or $50,000 a month in debt service going out. That was just draining the bank accounts. That was the first time in my life I actually had to call the lenders up and be like, look guys, like, I've never had to do this before. I'm not happy about doing this, but like I either pay you or I pay my team. Like that's where I'm at right now. So like I'm going to have to pay them to keep this thing rolling, and like don't worry, like we'll get through this, but I'm just letting you know where I'm at. So we ended up getting all those things resolved with the lenders. They were, you know, nice enough to also work with us and not like squeeze us for every single penny. That happened. Well, they got everything that they were promised. But then like, you know how some of these lenders are, like in addition, because you don't make good on your payments, then the interest that you promised them from 10 goes to like 20.
Correct.
And they add on all these extra fees. And I'm like, look, I got no problem paying you the 10, but I can't do all these extra fees. Like we just don't have the cash to bring to do that.
That's right. Yep.
So we made good on all those properties. We only had to give one back, which just was a clusterfuck. And long story short, like, we didn't even get to start. Like that's how bad it was. Like it was a deal where the roof was caving in and the city flagged it. So it was just accumulating fines from day one.
Right.
And we were like, oh, not a big deal. Like it's just for the roof. Like we should go in there. We could probably get a roof permit like in 2 weeks and we can redo the roof, you know, so we thought.
Yeah.
6 months later, still no roof permit.
Oh my God.
They were making it such a headache to get this roof permit. And then we're just like, bro, like there's no way we're going to make money on this. Like, I don't even know if we're going to be able to get their money back. So we ended up, that was the only one we ended up giving back. And that was coming out of 2019. And then we all know what happened in 2020, right?
Yep.
So like, we're just like getting through like the ocean, like we're just like putting our heads up and we're like finally breathing, starting to breathe.
Yep.
Q1 2020 looks like it's going to be the best Q1 we've had in a long time.
Yep.
It was, I'll never forget, because my stomach literally knotted. And then for the first time ever after that, I remember giving a presentation or a speech to the whole company and literally broke down and cried because I didn't think we were going to make it. Like, I really thought the ship was going under. I'm like, dude, we just got hit too many ways.
Yeah.
So basically we were set to close like 500 and some thousand. I don't remember the exact number, but call it 550 or whatever, set to close Q1 2020. Mm-hmm. Out of that 550, about just how it is in almost any real estate business, right? Like, a big portion is always set for those last few weeks of the quarter. Always.
Correct. You know? Yes. Yes.
So those last few weeks, there's always like, you're always getting on everyone. Like, come on. Like, where are we at?
We got to get this done. Yeah. It's got to close.
So it's like 250 left to close Q1. And literally once when COVID came, it was March.
Yep.
That 250 just went to zero. Mm. Like, deposits, buyers, no problem.
Everybody bailed.
We walk away from our deposits. Yep. We don't care. Right. Lenders who had given loan commitments to these buyers to close.
All pulling them back.
We don't care. We're pulling back. Mm. Everyone just pulled back. Obviously, we couldn't resell them for anywhere near what we wanted to.
Correct.
So it was a clusterfuck. I thought we were going to go under. We announced, in order to stay afloat, everyone in the company took a 50% pay cut.
50, including
the owners, all of us, 50%. Then, like, after a month or a month and a half, I think we bumped it up to like 70, and everyone went to 70%. And then after like another month or two, I was like, you know, I'm like, I was telling my business partner, I'm like, this doesn't feel right, man. Like, I think we should need to pay what we would pay someone. And that means that some people just got to go. Like, we just can't do it, you know?
Yep.
And so we did. We ended up making some hard decisions. And I think, like, well, two main people left. But these two main people, some people were like, oh, that's nothing. I'm like, yeah, but those two main people were with me for 4 or 5 years. Like, okay. They're not easy decisions to make, you know? And then we had also some other VAs in the marketing department and stuff, but I didn't have to make those fires. So it wasn't that hard for me. But yeah. And then we restructured, you know, I don't even remember. Will we make money in 2020? Yeah, we did. We ended up making money in 2020 and turned it around. It wasn't a great year, but it was still profitable. And here we are in 2021, about to close off the year. And we're doing well. Like, we're almost at that 500 cash target from literally losing everything. I mean, so 19, I didn't mention that. After all those rehabs and all those properties were off the books, 500K net losses.
500K gone. Net loss 19.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just from the properties, not including the business, just in those rehabs, 500K net.
Just inside the losses. Rehab component of the business. Yeah.
Correct. So it was brutal. It was real brutal.
It seems like it would have been maybe easier. Would have been easy just to give up and say, I'm done. I quit. Oh, yeah.
Dude, I can't.
I'm going to go do something else. This is way too hard. This isn't to liken back to what you said earlier. Oh, this is not worth the headache. Well, what was inside of you that even kept you going?
The thought crossed my mind so many times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was even funny because at that time, you know, working with a mutual friend, Joe.
Yeah.
And Joe's here talking, and like, he starts bringing me on to his talks to start talking and like talking to all these people. Yeah. And, you know, I said, if I'm going to do this, like, in order for me to feel whole doing this, I have no problem teaching people, but I'm not like, I can't sugarcoat things. Like for me to feel whole while doing this, like, my job is going to be to teach people from these mistakes that I just made and be open and vulnerable about these mistakes. Mm-hmm. Because if I try and be any other way, like, it's just not who
can't
I am.
True
like,
yourself.
I just can't do it. That's you know what I mean? So, but yeah, to answer your question, I mean, dude, I don't know. Like, it's just not in my DNA to quit. It's just, it's very hard. Like, I mean, there's things I will give up. Don't get me wrong. And I think from a spiritual perspective, I think there are things in life that you have to give up on and like, oh, right. Like, for instance, like the situation with my wife when we got divorced, you know, but I mean, keep in mind, we were together fucking 10 years, like, and it wasn't just like from one time to the next, like I chose to give up. No, like, we fucking saw 5 different therapists. Like, we spent tons of money trying to make this shit work. Travel the world, going to go see the best relationship speakers. Like, I did everything in my fucking power.
Yeah.
And it just got to a point where like, everything is no longer enough. And so in that presentation, when I told you, I had cried to the team because I really thought the company was going to go under. My message was like, look, if you want to ride with us so the wheels fall off, like, you guys are more than welcome, but I don't know what's going to happen. And I just, if you guys want to leave now, you can go ahead and leave now. You know, and I told Omar, I'm like, look, if this shit goes under, then fuck it. It goes under. What's the worst that can fucking happen? Right.
You know? How many left? When you had that conversation with them.
No one.
No one left.
No one.
No one.
Everybody left. Said that they would ride with me till the wheels fall off.
Mm.
Yeah, which was cool. Even with the 50% pay cuts, no one left. I mean, mind you too, it was COVID, right? Like, where you were going to go at that time.
Right, right.
Like, right when shit, when the world was falling apart. You know right. what I mean?
Yeah.
And everybody was very understanding and like, you know, and it's like, and I also made them aware of the fact like, hey, it's not you guys. Like, it's all of us. Like, I took a 50% pay. Like, we're all taking it. It's not yeah. just the employees, you know?
Right, yep.
So, yeah. Did I answer your question?
That's perfect. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, but first a word from our sponsors. Thinking about adding people to your team now or in the next year? New and experienced investors alike are turning to the definitive book on hiring written by yours truly. It's called Unicorn Hunting for Real Estate Investment Companies. How to easily attract, screen, and land a unicorn. It's the complete hiring funnel. This book is a step-by-step process. It includes the secret sauce for attracting more applicants than you'll ever need, the exact resources to use along with screenshots so it's easy to follow, how to accurately compensate the role and find candidates who will work for 15 to 30% less than the average wage in your home city. P.S. No, we're not shipping the jobs overseas. How to weed out applicants, including the exact word-for-word my team uses in our own business. Every single email needed for the entire process, it's all included. The screening tools used when interviewing, when to make the job offer. It's so easy that 90% of the work that goes into unicorn hunting can be done by someone else or a VA. This book retails on Amazon for $49.95. But since you listen here to Real Grit, I want to say thanks. I want to give you a free copy. I just ask that you cover the shipping handling. To get your free copy along with a few valuable bonuses I have not yet even mentioned, go to www.landaunicorn.com. That's www.landaunicorn.com right now to get your free book. For somebody, how about this? For somebody newer in the business, what advice would you give them?
In the wholesaling business?
Yeah. Well, let's say the wholesaling, the real estate, you know, however you want to define it. Wholesaling, fix and flip, those acquiring assets,
yeah.
income producing assets.
Well, for wholesaling in general, I don't think there's very many people, and maybe I'm wrong, but I've been speaking to wholesalers and I've been in the industry for a while. Yep. So like, I don't right. think there's very many wholesalers that get into this business to become wholesalers. Like everyone's end game is the assets and acquiring the assets.
Yeah.
And so with that being said, I would tell any new wholesaler to not forget that end game and to figure out how to position yourself, do that as soon as possible. Not like, you know, because we fell for the trap of, oh, like this thing is spitting out a ton of cash. And what would happen if we grew it 2x or 3x or 4x. And then at that point, we can go acquire even more. So then we delayed the end game or delayed the end goal for this, you know, sight of this is going to happen and fuel this even more.
Yeah.
And then it didn't happen. Now, if it would have happened, who's to say we would have actually bought? Maybe we would have been then thinking, well, this should work. What if we double it again? What happened then? Right. And right. you keep playing this like game of like always chasing this thing, that this unicorn. Mm-hmm. And you know, in real estate, like this, if you were building some type of like patent and service, or you had some type of SaaS company or something that had true inherent value to the company that you can sell for a multiple, great, go build this asset. But the real estate business, the wholesaling business, is not the asset. It's the asset is the actual machine that acquires the assets. But mm-hmm. if it's not acquiring the assets, there is no asset. Like the asset
there's
is
no business. Correct.
Yeah. The asset is you. And so like, don't lose sight of that and like, make sure that you start doing that as soon as possible. I remember I met with this young guy who was like asking me for advice. Mm-hmm. I want to say he was probably 25 years old. And he was asking me for advice on how to grow his business. Right. Like, but here's the difference. So he started buying rental property from day one and then was like, well, I got all this cash now and capital. He's like, I want to learn to wholesale just because like, it's really hard for me to find these deals. So I started going through his numbers. Long story short, he had like a net worth of like 5 mil and he was bringing in like 500,000 a year clean, like net cash flow from his portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, dude, I'm like, you're asking the wrong question. I'm like, every wholesaler wants to be you.
You're going backwards.
And you're going backwards. Yeah. You know, like it makes no fucking sense.
Yeah.
But I hope that, like, you know, if for the newer guys listening, like that sits in their head, like the gold is the assets and the security that comes from knowing that, like, man, like the wholesaling, the income in the wholesaling business is not predictable. It's not consistent. And it always requires you hunting for the next deal for that to come. And then there's things that shorten it, right? Like reality is, right? Like, I don't know how things are for you in your wholesaling business now, but like for us, it's the end of the year. So like you can spend all the marketing dollars you want right now. You can rev up, crank up all the engines you want, but the reality is it's the end of the year. Like
you're not closing anything else.
Things slow down.
Correct.
Like people just want to stop selling right now at this point. So like,
holidays are different here in the north where I am, and the weather's moved in. It's a different story.
Yeah. Business pauses. What do you do? That's just the fucking nature of the business. Correct. Like, that's just how it works. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like the rental income for the most part, like that's consistent. Like that thing is going to come in. Like, there might be some occasions where you might lose a tenant paying, but like the predictability of it is way, way more predictable.
Yeah. What I heard you say is remember why you got into the business in the first place. And that really means for you, identify the fact that you want to, in asset producing income, we're going to call that passive. I'll use it in quotes because as you said, nothing's totally passive.
Right.
There's still work associated with it, but it's not the same kind of work. So what I hear you saying is the wholesale is the entry into the business, whether you fix and flip or don't, whatever that may be. But your goal is to acquire assets, to put them on the balance sheet, to reduce your cash that you pay the federal government through all the tax benefits that one gets from doing this. And just to keep that machine, the acquisition machine going so you can earn income there and place it by holding assets.
100%.
By holding assets. Yeah.
And if you start doing that and you start looking at Facebook or Instagram or going to masterminds or going to events or anything in a social gathering where people who are not being as disciplined as you are doing that, you're going to feel like you're doing something wrong. Because they're going to be driving nicer cars. They're going to be living in bigger houses. They're basically going to have all the shiny objects and all the external displays of wealth while you're slowly building this thing. But what they don't see and what you don't see is that at the rate that they're growing and doing this thing and the way that you're doing it, in the next 5-10 years, you will be light years ahead of them just from the exponential component of the asset. And it's hard for our brains to see that because our brains only think logically, like sequentially. They don't think exponentially. Like,
correct.
We don't realize that, you know, 2 times 2 or 2 to the second power to the third to the fourth. And you start adding that up and it really grows really, really fast way before, like when the ways were like, wow, I didn't never in a million years imagine that, but it does. And so like, you really have to take a step back, like you said, and like, look at that and there's grit and discipline that are required for that, you know?
I may butcher the quote. I know you're a fan of Buffett as I am too. I think he said something like compound interest is the 8th wonder of the world.
Right.
I'm close on that. You guys get the general idea there. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's where you're headed with that.
Yeah. And like, if you look at all the wealthiest people in real estate, and if you study that, no one's a wholesaler.
No one's a wholesaler. Nope. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. You get there through asset ownership.
Yeah.
Right. Through compound interest, through that, through all the benefits that one gets that are derived from owning things.
If I can say one last thing, like you want to know how valuable your wholesaling business is, go to a bank. Ask them to lend you money for your wholesaling business. Right. See how well that goes.
Yeah.
Then go to the bank if you have assets that have value and are not over leveraged.
Piece
and go
of property. To bank. Yep.
Yeah. And talk money. Like
night and day.
Night and day.
Yep. You're exactly right. So you've been in here since 2013. You've been through some up and downs. 19 was bumpy. You know, first part of 2020 was like life or death, and the team bound together. Probably
quarter one and quarter two of 2020 was a complete fucking shit show.
Yeah.
And then quarter three and quarter four, we bounced back.
Through what you've built, probably through the piece that cuts all the way through, the culture that you've built, everybody bound together and saw it through. And this year sounds like a very good year. Where are you guys headed?
The major focus, honestly, right now has been growing what we're holding company, Freedom Cap. And so we're
Freedom in Cap. I love that name.
Yeah. So we're in the process right now of building out the property management, which has been a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
We hired like this third party manager.
Yeah.
And did it in the beginning because we're like, dude, we don't want to deal with it. It's not worth the
hassle. Would you agree with me in the property management specifically of rental properties? Now, I'm not talking commercial properties. I'm talking rental properties, houses, things that people occupy is the hardest end of this business.
Of like the buy and hold side?
Yeah. Of wholesaling, of fix and flip, of buy and hold, of asset acquisition is the hardest end of the business.
I haven't done it long enough to say like, we just started.
You've been through like some bumpy fix and flips.
Oh yeah.
So maybe for you, it's not.
Yeah. I'm a systems guy. And yes. So creating systems and putting systems in place and using tech to like simplify things. I think those are all things like all strengths that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so like applying that to the property management company, we've seen huge differences. Like as soon as we hired someone to like own the property management mm-hmm. division and they stepped in to take over the existing property managers, what was doing, like we just saw how messy and sloppy it was. It was just like a disaster.
It got revealed. Yep.
Yeah. Like we had no idea that it was that bad until like we sent someone in-house to really step in. So that's the major focus. Like when I look at the numbers there, so like right now, an example, like the assets we bought this year, we're getting about a 5 to 6x on average equity multiple, meaning for every dollar we put into that company, it's spitting back about 5 to 6x in equity. It's spitting out an average of like 20-some% cash, well, return on equity. So a dollar put in is giving us 5 to 6x back in equity. That equity is producing a 20% return mm-hmm. on cash flow. And that's not including the cost X. So like, right. You know,
that's pre-tax benefit.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. like I'm super bullish. Like I don't know anything else that's going to do that for me. I mean, maybe there's some potential and verticals for like stuff in the crypto world, but mm-hmm. like, I don't have the time, nor do I have the desire to like get into that and learn about it. Like, this is what I'm doing. I'm good at it. It's where my focus is at. I'm not going to like get distracted. Yeah. So that's the focus right now. It's just building that up and getting financially free. You know, I think at the rate that we're going within the next 2 to 3 years, I should be, you know, 100% financially free from where we're at in the properties without needing the wholesale business, which I'll still keep running. But I do, my plans are eventually to, I want to disrupt a different industry, honestly. Like I want to get into the health space.
Yeah.
That's where my heart's at. But in the meantime, we're going to do this. We're going to grow this. But eventually I do want to put someone else in charge to run the wholesale business and not be involved in day to day.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. Let's move into our final segment, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
What's your favorite quote?
Favorite quote. I would say it's a quote from a spiritual master named Paul Twitchell. I would have to look for it, but it's basically, it's a long quote. It's on our website, actually. It's it goes something to the effect of, I'm going to paraphrase it, but basically that love, what is it? Love is not a noun or what is it? It's not something that you can describe. It's an act of demonstration that you actually show for somebody else. And he then adds that if you desire love, then realize that the only way to get love is to first fill yourself with it until you become a magnet of it. And once you become a magnet of it, then you can give it. And the only way to get it is to give it first. Mm-hmm. So that's my favorite quote.
When did that come into your life?
I was young, man. Probably around like 20, call it sometime around 2008. Okay. So what is that? 13 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm 33. So about 20 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think holds most investors back?
Holds them back, like stops them from like,
from
accomplish or yes. just, or like, or keeps them at a certain level and not going to the next level.
Yeah. Let's say it keeps them at a certain level and not allowing them to progress to the next level.
There's a lot to that, but I would say that obviously discipline is number one. Like staying disciplined it's easier said than done. Especially when things are going well. When things are going well, it's much harder to stay disciplined and just correct. Like, I can,
you know. There's so many good things in your life. The choices become rather abundant, right?
Right.
It's tough to stay in that lane with exactly what got you there.
I would say that, but I think the biggest thing, and discipline goes towards this, but I think it really has to do with seeing reality as clear as you can possibly see it without any biases or prejudices or clouding or coloring, and then making accurate decisions based upon the view or the lens of which you see reality. So like when you study guys like Buffett or Dalio mm-hmm. or some of these greatest yep. investors, like they don't fool themselves, you know, right. they don't get shiny object syndrome like Buffett, which we was since we both like Buffett, yep. we didn't talk about Buffett, but Buffett talks about like how for, you know, before he says yes to an opportunity, he probably said no 99 times.
Correct.
And he's but not exaggerating, you know correct. What I mean? And at that level, with billions in the bank, when you can afford to put money right. everywhere.
Anywhere. Yes.
Think about the discipline that that requires. You yes. know what I mean?
Yes.
Like it's hard to do that when you have $100,000 in the bank and you're correct. Like, oh, well, I could buy these three different deals, you know, right. but like, are you really ruthless in your criteria and your objective? And can you see the risks in that deal? And can you see what can go wrong?
All the things that can go wrong. Yes.
And can you account for all those things? Mm-hmm. Right. So like yep. back in 2019, the reason we got into all those problems was because we weren't looking at those things because, right. you know, it was the golden child with the Midas touch. Nothing can go wrong.
Right.
right. Right.
Yeah.
So you learn to really see life differently. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. I think the most successful investors don't fool themselves and they have a very, very strong defensive approach. I think investing is a defensive game. It's not an offensive game. So that's a different approach that you have to take if you're playing this game. And yeah. And I think none of them, like the best investors also acknowledge that they don't know, like they don't know what they don't know. And they realize that it's like impossible to predict the future or what's going to happen in the market or any of these things. And so they make decisions knowing that they don't know.
I'm going to drop another Buffett quote on you to piggyback on what you just said. You said real estate's a defensive game. Buffett says there's two rules. Number one, don't lose money. Number two, don't forget rule number one.
Don't forget rule number one. Yeah.
It's a defensive game, right? It's really challenging to make it back as soon as you lose it. Outside of real estate, what are you passionate about?
If I can say one last thing too, but yeah. Buffett also says that optimism is the investor's like worst enemy.
Yeah.
You know, and like pessimism is an investor's best friend or something mm-hmm. like that. I'm paraphrasing. Yeah. I don't know the exact yeah. quote, but something like that. What was the question again?
Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
I would definitely say health.
Yeah.
Just like when it comes to really understanding what is right now in this country, easily, I think the statistics are under what they really are, but mm-hmm. about 50 to 60% of the population right now has a chronic disease in this country. And again, I think that's underestimated. I think it's greater than that. And so I'm really, really fascinated by why. Why is these chronic diseases widespread? And when then you start looking at hunter-gatherers and you start looking at Paleolithic humans and all these things and realizing like, okay, these diseases did not exist.
Did not
before.
Exist. Yeah.
This is a creation of modern life. So I'm really fascinated by learning about this. Yeah. Like why are these things happening?
Modern and life. Then, you really mean modern food life.
Yeah. Well, it's everything because it's not just, there's so many things combined. It's not just food is a huge component, but it's everything, man. Like we're not breathing good air inside our homes. We're exposed to poor quality lighting. We're not outside running and moving around like we used to. It's very multifaceted. And yeah, I really, really, really like to understand why these things happen and what causes these diseases and then how to reverse them.
How to reverse
them. And how to actually nip it, you know? So that's where my heart's at.
What's your favorite way to make impact?
I would say through talking, as we're doing now, right? Yeah. Writing. I really like to write. I would say talking, writing, and just one-on-one conversations with regular people. It's super cool. Like I got a lot of neighbors here that like have asked me for like, we run into questions and then they, you know, they realize that I'm into health and they're like, oh, right. Well, what should I do about this or this? And then they'll come back like weeks later and be like, yo, I tried that. And like, I feel so good. Like, thank you. And I'm like, no problem. Like, I love that. You know?
Yeah. No, that's way cool.
Yeah.
This has been a terrific talking to you. Let me do this again. Let me give you the last word. If people want to follow you or connect with you, what's the best way for them to do so?
I would say Facebook. You can go to facebook.com and just look me up. Gabe Garcia, I think 311.
We'll drop a link to it.
We'll drop the link in there. I think it's Gabe Garcia 311. And yeah, that's the best way.
Good, good. Well, I really appreciate your time here. So for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons reminding you that real estate requires real grit. I'll see you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode.